Now that we've heard the frustrations of an author getting photographed for his first book, let's hear from Marion Ettlinger, a photographer who's famous in the literary world for her author photos. Truman Capote, Joyce Carol Oates, Raymond Carver, Ann Patchett, Edmund White, Robert Stone, Cormac McCarthy, Richard Russo, Russell Banks, Sarah Vowell, Andre Debuse III, and bell hooks are among the many writers she's photographed. And she swears she's never told any of them that they should try to look like Sebastian Younger. She's known for her brooding, introspective portraits. Ettlinger will have a book of her author photos published next fall. In the meantime, you can see a few of her pictures on our website at freshair.com. Ettlinger started photographing authors in 1983 when she was hired by Esquire magazine to do portraits of 45 authors and journalists who had contributed to the magazine's 50th anniversary issue. I asked her why she likes to photograph writers.
I remember when I was a kid, I had a card game called the Author's Card Game, and it displayed on each card a different portrait of a writer like Tennyson and Longfellow and Thackeray and Oliver Wendell Holmes, and they just looked so biblical and fabulous to me right off the card. And I guess that sensation that I had when I saw these images stayed with me, and later, as I became someone who liked to read as well, it just all kind of gelled. And I have done portraits of many sorts of wonderful and creative people, but when I started to photograph writers, I did feel this great sort of satisfaction and click about that these were my natural subjects.
Do you think of your author photos as having a certain look?
I suppose that that's true. I am told that that is true. And I think that, you know, early on when I saw a bunch of my photographs displayed somewhere side by side, I took a step back, and I did think they had a cohesive look to them. And that actually is when it dawned on me that, well, maybe I could get these published or something. It was the fact that they did have something that glued them together in a look.
And what was that?
Well, the most important aspect that I strive for in a portrait is that the person is present in the portrait, that they are there. And it's extremely interesting when I review my contact sheets at various times, and there are 30 images in a row that are virtually identical in terms of the pose and the setup and everything. And the variations really might come from the most subtle expressions in the face of the person. And in one frame, they're there. They're utterly present. And the next frame, they're kind of not. They've drifted. And that's not to say that drifting can also be something that is lovely and that you want to use, but that sense of presence is really key to me. And also, especially with authors, I like to bring out the fact and to make them look smart and soulful and maybe sexy. And well, often the first two might just, you know, make the third one a certainty.
Why sexy? Why does a writer need to look sexy?
They don't need to look sexy, but I guess if you're in the camp that you find smart and soulful sexy, then they just will.
Now, a lot of your photos of writers, the writers look very kind of, the men look kind of hard-boiled. There's a certain drama about the women. What if a writer shows up and they're really just kind of schlumpy, you know? And to really capture the essence of this person would be a photograph of a schlumpy-looking person. What are you going to do? Are you going to go for the schlumpy, or are you going to, like, rework it so that you've got that drama or the hard-boiled? You know what I mean?
Well, maybe I can't go from schlumpy to hard-boiled, but I think even the schlumpiest of us have our better moments, and that's what I'm looking for.
And how do you find it?
You know, you just look for it. You just be with that person. You try to create an atmosphere of permission, I'd say. And if you wait around long enough, you might see something go by you that is a kind of a transformative, but yet still true to the person aspect. And you either try to, you know, get it as it's happening or recreate it. Like, you know, some people in their pre-photo nervous state might say, oh, you know, I'm really not photogenic, trust me, and want me to know that. And I understand that because, you know, I think there is such a thing as that photogenic, and I think a few people have that. But I think most people don't have that. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that being photogenic is not required, because I think everybody can be photographed well or not so well. And if you're photogenic, well, that's just like gravy. But, you know, and anybody can be photographed, the best version of themselves. Even a schlumpy person has a range.
Photographer Marion Ettlinger will talk more about her pictures of writers in the second half of our show. A book of her author photos will be published next fall. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Marion Ettlinger, a photographer famous in the book world for her portraits of authors. Authors like Raymond Carver, Cormac McCarthy, Richard Russo, Ann Patchett, bell hooks, and Sarah Vowell. She has a book of her author photos that will be published next fall. In the meantime, you can see some of her pictures on our website, freshair.com. Let's look at some of the photos that you've taken. You have a photo of Truman Capote in which he's in profile and looking up. It's a very odd angle, and his mouth is kind of turned down into a frown. Talk about that pose.
It was a shoot for a magazine, and he consented to do the shoot, and with the request that the office of the magazine, which was Esquire, by the way, would inform him 3 days before the shoot and remind him that this was happening, 2 days before the shoot, remind him the day before and on the day. And so they did that. I was on the road, and they kept up with me and telling me that he was with the program. And except for the day of the shoot where they couldn't get hold of him, but they said, go ahead, go anyway. And I went there and knocked on the door, and there was nobody home. And I went away for a while. And when I came back, I was driving up the driveway, and a car was coming out of the driveway, and we stopped and rolled down the windows, and a friend of his, I believe it was Jack Dunphy, said hello, and I said, hi, I'm here to photograph Mr. Capote, and he said, good luck, and he rolled up the window and drove away. So I went, that doesn't bode well, and I drove up to the house, and this was early on in my work life, as I might have mentioned, and I was getting out of the car, Truman came running and screaming out of the house, waving his fists in the air, like it was very cartoon style, and screaming about this was the wrong day and he can't be bothered with this and Esquire, you know, why'd they send him such an amateur and pretty much terrorizing me. And then he said to me, you know, I've been photographed by all the greatest photographers in the world. And I said, oh, yes, Mr. Capote, I've seen those photos, and they're just wonderful. And he continued in that mode until he said, well, okay, let's get it over with since you're here. And so I said, okay, well, let's go into your house, and I'll look around. And he said, well, I'm not going to let you in my house. What do you think, I'm crazy? Why would I let you in my house? I said, well, okay, perhaps you would like to change shirts or what you're wearing, because he was wearing kind of a grubby sweatshirt, I believe, that said something on it, like, I don't know, Sagaponic or something. And he said, I'm not going to change, and this is what I'm wearing. And, you know, I said, okay. I said, well, perhaps we can go over there on the veranda. I see there's some nice old chairs up there. And he went, I'm not going up there. It's really dirty up there, and I'm going to get all dirty. What do you think? And it was at that point that I realized that he was just going to deny me everything. And I had tears of rage creeping up my throat. And I was thinking, he's going to ruin this for me. He's going to make me fail. I'm going to look really bad, and it's going to be his fault, but it won't matter because I will just have failed. And then as I was quivering, he said, start now or get out of here, basically. So I went, okay. And we, standing there, I just started to photograph him. And the first frames are him just glaring at me. So maybe to relieve myself from that gaze, I asked him to turn in profile. And he turned in profile. And as he did that, he started to do this extraordinary thing where he just started to lift his head and raise his chin. And he started to look truly magnificent. And I suppose I murmured some words of encouragement, and he continued to do that and held that. And I took the rest of them that way. And when he heard the last shot being made, he said, that's it, goodbye, and walked back into the house. And the great art lesson that he taught me was that, well, prior to him, well, basically, I know what kind of photo I would have taken of him if I had had my way. And it would have been fine, but hopefully. But prior to him, I had only known courtesy, cooperation, and all kinds of nice stuff. And I just assumed that those things were crucial in order to get a good result. And he taught me that that's not necessarily true, and that if you go with what's happening, something much more interesting and more beautiful might happen as a result of that. So I've always, I mean, I kind of respected and loved him before I met him, and him, even with my little trauma in the middle, I just kind of loved him more for it all in the end.
Now, I should mention, too, that this photo is in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty close-up, pretty tight close-up of his face, though you see some of his, you see his neck and some of his shoulder, and he's wearing that T-shirt, though you can't see what's written on it because the shot doesn't go down that far. But it's a very high-focus shot. I mean, you know, you see every wrinkle on his face, you see the pores on his skin. Why did you go for that type of real, you know, high focus?
I don't think I consciously said, I'm going to do that, but that's how it came out. And I was happy with that result because it's such a close-up of his head and it's a side view, so there's a lot of cheek and neck and space in it. And the fact that it's populated by a bristle of beard and a line, I think just gives it this wonderful sense of who he is. And I personally don't find it to be an exploitation of his age or condition at all. I think he looks very much like a Roman senator, or some people have said he kind of looked like Marlon Brando in that photo.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sarah Val, you took her author photo.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very tight close-up of her face. She's kind of like surrounded by darkness, but her face is illuminated. And it's a very kind of sober, almost grave expression on her face. And whereas her writing is very funny, and her writing is so much about being like neurotic and nerdy. And her look is so different in this photo than her sound, or I think than her image in person.
I had never seen her before she entered. Oh, actually, I think I had asked her to send me a photo before I met her. So I was really struck by, I'm sure this is part of radio world, that people's expectations of what you look like and what the person actually looks like are either right on or totally no relationship. And I had a very specific image of her in my mind, which was not what she looked like at all, just even in terms of being fair or dark and all that. I have always detected a dark side to Sarah's work,
mm-hmm.
Despite her incredible wit and her offbeat take on things. And in person, I found her a very serious person.
So that's why you wanted to go for that more serious look.
Well, I think in general, my work has a somber quality to it. In the case of somebody who's written, you know, a hilarious novel, then I try to get that twinkle or levity in the eye, but it didn't quite happen with that photo of her.
Now, you specialize in author photos.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many writers who are, well, they're kind of loners. You know, they work all day alone at home. And some writers aren't the most social people. Many of them are kind of eccentric. And a lot of them are self-conscious and not that comfortable being photographed.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're being photographed, you know, a lot is at stake because it's going to be on your book. This photo is going to live longer than you are. So I'm sure a lot of writers are very uncomfortable about getting their picture taken. Are there things that you'll say to a writer early on to try to reassure them or put them at ease?
Well, often we speak before we meet. And I try to communicate just that we're going to try to do something good, and then I'm on their side, basically. But what you were saying before about writers being solitary people, it is so true that so often when they come to me, either they're at that moment where they've or at some finishing point of their book, and they are truly coming out of a cave and kind of blinking in the light, and boom, all of a sudden they have to do this exterior work that is really not about what they do at all. And I definitely want it to be a gentle transition or not as bad as they think it's going to be. And actually, one of my most favorite things to hear that I hear frequently is that when we're taking leave of each other, a writer might say to me, "Well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be." that fills my heart with joy. I'm always happy to hear that.
My guest is photographer Marion Ettlinger. She specializes in portraits of writers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Marion Ettlinger, a photographer famous in the literary world for her portraits of authors. Now, when you photograph a writer, do you work with a stylist? Do you, or does someone who you're working with show up with stylish clothes for them to wear in case their clothes don't, like, look good enough for the shoot?
No. I work alone. I don't have an assistant. I don't even use lights, by the way. Some writers request some of these things,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm happy to oblige. But it's certainly not something that I need to happen. I don't have any costumes or anything lying around. I might have a few staples like a black t-shirt or a black skirt that's kind of all purpose just in case we want to get some, you know, like somebody only has like a pair of, I don't know, plaid pants or something.
Yeah, right.
You might want to like, you quiet down that part for certain photos, and then I might have something that, you know, for those emergencies. But I don't have outfits at all. And what, you know, the writer's own clothes are the clothes that I want to use.
Now, nearly everybody is pretty self-conscious about their face. And everybody has parts of their face that they think are their real weak parts, whether it's a blemish, a receding hairline, a big nose, wrinkles, whatever, big ears. So if somebody's self-conscious about their part of their face, do they mention it to you usually? Like, can you make my nose look small, that kind of thing?
Yes, I've been asked to perform all sorts of miraculous acts. Most are beyond my powers. I like to be aware of it because certainly in photography you can do things that bring out good and or bad things, and I'd rather bring out the good things. I mean, I feel like one of the mandates, is that I'm not sure that's the right word, of my work is to isolate and perhaps exaggerate the uniqueness of the subject, not necessarily their uniquely bad feature, but the uniqueness of what is the best in them, what is the thing that is striking and makes them look uniquely like themselves. And I like to try to turn things in that direction.
And going for that isn't necessarily going to mean making them look more handsome or more pretty, right?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, it might mean like having their face have a lot of character, but not necessarily having it be pretty, right?
Right. It can mean like bringing out like this incredible sculpture event that's happening on their face, like the cut of a bone. That's wow. When you turn the head this way, there it is. You know, and it's totally amazing. And that adds a sense of, I believe it adds, rather than beauty or handsomeness, like it might bring some drama and some sculptural event to the photo.
And I think one of the most difficult things for somebody who's getting photographed by a professional photographer for a publicity shot, for a book, or whatever other reason, is that it's almost like a fashion shoot in the sense that you're almost like a professional model. You have to be there posing sometimes for hours,
right?
Off and on for hours. And if you're not a professional model, it's really quite a strain to be under the gaze of a camera for that extended amount of time, and to have any sense of focus or affect.
Are you speaking from personal experience?
Well, I am, actually. I've had to take, not for a book, but I've had to take, you know, publicity shots. And
right.
I just find it exhausting and trying, and I'm not good at smiling on demand. So if a photographer says, okay, smile, I mean, well, sure, I can make those lips move, you know, in the imitation of a smile, but it's really not going to be very convincing.
Well, I don't permit smiling, so let's get that straight.
You don't even permit it. to tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't. Although, you know, when I look at my contact sheets, eventually something will have happened during the shoot that makes a person laugh or smile, and it's a thing of beauty, of course. But for what I'm going for, see, I feel like that is a lovely thing, and perhaps has more of a place in the history of the person and a person, more of a personal photo. But I think for something like kind of going for more of a, I suppose, iconic moment or image, I feel like a grin kind of, in the best sense of the word, distorts the face and distracts a little bit from this structure that I'm so interested in. And now that's not to say that I'm trying to save the photos from grimness most of the time. I do like them to be serious. But that doesn't mean that I don't welcome, like, levity and wit and all those good things to come through the face. But I think they can come through just fine, short of a big grin. I think they can come through the musculature of the face. And it's corny to say, but through the eyes. And just in the expression. And that will happen hopefully during the course of the shoot when somebody feels slightly amused or something. And if it's not there, I might add for a drop of it if I need it for a certain thing. But I never say smile.
You shoot in black and white. Why not color?
Because I find, first of all, I do respond to color in many people's work, but I can pretty much say that I don't respond to color in portraiture. And I find black and white a riveting medium. It's my medium. That's why I work in it. To me, color is another, it's another medium. It's not, it has nothing to do with what I do. And I don't want to see it. I like the way black and white breaks things down, and I love the whole chiaroscuro of it. And you know, it's a question I've been trying to think of the answer to for a really long time. Like, why? What is it about black and white? And I mean, man, you know, like, love black and white movies, old ones, new ones. I just, and what is it? Why? What is it about it? And I'm embarrassed that I've never been able to really put my finger on it and articulate what it is. And I'm sure somebody can or is, and hopefully I will be able to, at the end of my life, know what that thing was. But it's just what I see and respond to. It turns me on.
You're going to have your own book coming out in 2003, a book of your author photographs. I assume you're going to have a photograph of yourself on the cover of the book. Who's going to take your picture?
I took it.
You took it already?
Yeah. Actually, I took it a few years ago before I knew I was going to have a book, just because I realized I was pretty photographically absent from the earth and spend my life recording others. And I thought, well, all right, I better get this done. And so I, with dread, with the same dread that my subjects approach me, I made a date in my appointment book for about 3 weeks hence. And on that day, I got all dolled up, and I went to my studio, and I met myself and put myself in that other position. And, you know, I have very simple, old-fashioned equipment, and so I don't have, like, any kind of sophisticated way of taking my photo without, like, jumping up and down between every frame and hitting a self-timer. So it was, like, turned out to be kind of an athletic and strenuous activity. Actually, the next day, I felt like I had been horseback riding or skiing or something. Like, every bone, new bones in my body hurt that I hadn't realized were there. And it was an incredible experience because at first it was, like, utterly confusing. Like, who am I? Who am I looking at? It took me, I was baffled and confused. And of course, I couldn't see myself, which is what I'm used to doing, is seeing my subject. So I was shooting myself blind. And then I feel like at a certain moment, the accumulative visual history and information of watching my own subjects before my camera suddenly kicked in and informed me about who I was and who was I looking at. And all those questions suddenly fell away, and I was able to be present in that odd situation. And what I can say about the results of that day is that I got a number of photos that I can certainly live with. But the thing that really made me happy was that the photograph of myself looks just like the photos I take of other people. It there's not a jarring, and then she photographed herself. Like, it just seemed, in my view, I guess others can tell me whether they agree, but it looks like one of my photos. So got that over with.
Photographer Marion Ettlinger, a book of her portraits of writers, will be published next fall. You can see some of her photos on our website at freshair.com. This is Fresh Air.